Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, December 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, copy it off, print it as often as you like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it'll give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often. There's also a whole list of audio files of shows just like this one you can listen to that contain a lot of shows that people called in and actually got stepped through the worksheet process, and some of them where they gave powerful testimonials about how the active use of that worksheet process improved the quality of their lives and relationships, and some of them where we're just talking about the power and the dynamics that make this such a useful tool. And we hope you access that material, and if you have comments or questions or testimonials, give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little hand of an icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 343rd day of the year. And today's lesson simply reads, I am not asked to make sacrifice to find the mercy and the peace of the Creator. The commentary reads, the end of all suffering cannot be a loss. The gift of everything can be but gain. It can only be a gain when you're given everything. You, Creator, you only give. You never take away. And you, Creator, created me to be like you. So sacrifice becomes impossible for me as well as for you. I, too, must give. And so all things are given unto me forever and forever. As I was created, I remain. Your offspring can make no sacrifice, for they must be complete, having the function of completing you as the creative force. I am complete because I am your offspring. I cannot lose, for I can only give, and everything is mine eternally. Everything of value is all of ours eternally. The mercy and the peace of the Creator are free. Salvation has no cost. It's a gift that must be freely given and received, and it is this that we would learn today. Pam Grout, in her Course in Miracle Experiment book, titles Lesson 343, "There's More Where That Came From." She quotes Sendhil Mullainathan as saying, "Believing in scarcity alters how we look at things. Our single-mindedness to scarcity leads us to neglect things that we actually value." Pam writes, "Lesson 343 defies the scarcity principle that runs our planet. It reads, 'I am not asked to make a sacrifice to the dude's mercy and peace in order to find the dude's mercy and peace.'" The dude is her nickname for God or the Creator. She writes, "When we operate from a scarcity mindset, we hoard, we refuse to share, and we lead with an overly protectionist stance. This misguided stance squeezes the life, the light, and the love right out of us. Things of true value," and she writes in parentheses, "in fact, that's how you can tell how valuable something really is," close parentheses, "things of true value are not scarce. They've never been scarce. Ideas, appreciation, gratitude, and love are all infinite. And they multiply like mold on an old slice of bread whenever we offer them freely. When we assume scarcity, as we're taught in this society, we limit our potential. We limit the possibilities. And that impacts how we think about ourselves and about others. So today, I'm encouraged to believe in my own vast, untapped potential and to recognize that others have the same infinite resources within them. Nothing real, nothing of value is finite. Everything real is self-generating, multidimensional, and it only expands when it's given away freely." So, give it away, give it away, give it away now. And that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and Course in Miracles experiment commentary for today. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes left to entertain your comments and your questions and or your recommendations for topics. 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and let us know how we can be of support to you today. I'm sitting here on a Thursday morning, so that means there is a support group tonight that's available absolutely free. All of the information about how you might join us for that is at mindshiftersacademy.org. Please remember, if you go there, there's a separate login page for the information for Tuesday's and Thursday's group. If you care to join us, please do. If you know of somebody who would benefit from joining us, please pass that information along. All you need to join us is a computer, internet access, and the information that's posted on mindshiftersacademy.org website. So how can we support you today? What's on your mind? What would be of service for you for us to discuss for the next 48 minutes. I am blessed from time to time to have somebody walk into my office and they've never been exposed to these tools before, and they start talking about how what this person did hurt me, and this situation was very painful, and I get to start reviewing from the beginning how I am the one that creates every emotion I experience. No one has ever done anything that's created an emotion in me. The interpretation that I choose and place on my awareness of what they did is what creates the emotion in me. And it either creates a new emotion, one I've rehearsed many times for many years, or it is resonating the energy of a trauma or some negative emotion that I downloaded days, weeks, months, years, or even decades ago. And that's the only thing that's ever resulted in me feeling an emotion. And when I wake up to the realization of that direct observation, then every time I begin to feel an emotion that's unpleasant or uncomfortable and I say I don't like it, I can apply the tools I've learned to change that and begin right there in that next moment to generate a different emotion, one that suits me better, one that I like more, one that's more pleasant. I can start, as the Course in Miracles experiment lesson says, I can start offering appreciation and gratitude and joy to others and know that's what I'm going to get back. Maybe not instantly, maybe not directly from that person, but over time, that's going to be more of my experience. These things, what is real, actually expands as you give it away. And the more you can be gentle with yourself, the more you can treat yourself lovingly, the more possible it is for you to treat others lovingly. And we all know what happens. When we embrace people with loving energy, it gets a very different response from that person than when we try to coat them with our anger or our fear or our grief or our trauma-based conclusions about life. So in this work, that's our calling. We are calling each other to start questioning anew, to start observing very directly, very practically, what's going on in our world? What's causing whatever experience we're having moment to moment? How are we actively participating in the creation of any negative emotional state? For that matter, any positive emotional state. And what can we do to gain mastery over that process so that in a very real way, we delight in whatever arises? Because even if it's something that we're not very fond of, we know this too shall pass. And we've got tools to start initiating that change that we're hoping for, looking for. We're aware that every emotion is just energy, and all that energy carries with it good information for us, good feedback about our life and our mental and emotional processes. And the more we get introduced to tools like this and the more we practice the use of them, the easier it gets for us to actually interrupt the pattern of upset, drama and trauma, grief, that literally has been our legacy from our families, from our culture, from our individual experiences in life. And the more I can interrupt that, the more I can choose again to focus on gratitude or appreciation or what I do have rather than continually focusing on what I don't have, the better my life gets. And that's why we're here. We're here to help you learn how to have a better life. What's up in your face these days that might benefit from the application of one or more of these tools? How can we support you in learning about using them either from the beginning, maybe you've never been introduced to these tools before, or maybe you've tried them off and on for weeks, months, or years, And you're looking for a way to tweak it to get a little bit more effective or efficient response. Either is a valid use of our time here, and we'd be happy to entertain your comments, questions, discussions, answers, refutations. I mean, there are occasionally I run into somebody who says, this isn't true. That really did hurt me. You're trying to tell me I created my emotions here, but what created my emotion was this person cheated on me. We'd been married for 7 years, and he cheated on me with my best friend, and that's what's causing my anger. And that's why I don't trust him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe you want to put forth something that refutes the observations we make here. That's fair game, too. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. Let us know how we can support you today. I had mentioned yesterday that on Tuesday night, one of our group members asked that we do something a little more gentle, a little more nurturing and nourishing rather than confrontational. So we spent time listening to the recording I made of myself reading The Way of Mastery Lesson 20. And one of the reasons that that book is probably far and away the one book in my life that I have read more than any other book, which is saying quite a bit at my age with a doctorate and all of that experience of doing therapy for 47 years, meaning also having been required to take ongoing educational training to keep certifications and licensing up and all that stuff. And the book I've read more than any other in that lifetime is The Way of Mastery. And why would I be reading that so much and rereading it so much? Well, because to my eye and ear, it is a kinder, gentler version of A Course in Miracles. And to my eye and ear, although this isn't shared by everybody, but to my eye and ear, it talks about this, the very same definition for forgiveness that Dr. Michael Rice finds in The Course in Miracles and the Kabor's manuscript. And the definition that comes from the third lesson, which is titled The Power of Forgiveness, the definition there is, to forgive means to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It isn't pardoning them for some horrible thing they've done. It's to release another, that you are choosing to release a faulty perception you've created in your mind, and you're projecting it onto your mind's image of this other person. It is, therefore, an act of forgiving or dismantling one's... I'm forgiving myself for my own projections. I am dismantling the false projections that I'm creating in my mind. And here's even more how it says to me, this is the same definition. The more I forgive, as I begin to forgive, even 77 times 70, each time I forgive or dismantle my false perceptions, I take myself deeper into the purity of my own consciousness. I get rid of what doesn't belong, what's been a false perception, what's an idea of trauma, what is some belief that I'm a finite being that can be hurt. As I dismantle that, I take myself deeper and deeper into the purity of my own being, my own consciousness. And as I do that, I begin to see how profoundly and deeply I have been coloring and affecting all of my relationships through the simple act of not being aware of the power of my projections. Right? My mind shows me this person is causing my anger, and I don't even question it. That's what I've been trained to believe. But as we know in this work, I can make observations that make it crystal clear to me that the other person, the situation that just happened, what they did, what they said, has no power to cause upset in me. One of the simplest ways to observe that is, you know, especially if I've been in a relationship with somebody for more than a few months, chances are there have been times when they've done something identical or similar to that, and I was in a good mood, or I didn't want to get dragged down that day, so I just sloughed it off, and I didn't choose to generate upset. With this tool, one of the most powerful tools we have, it isn't Michael Rice's tool or Guy Finley's tool or, you know, Pema Chodron's tool or Byron Katie's tool. It's just the tool of observation. With that tool, with the proper questioning, I can start to see the actuality of how these things work, how my mind and its thoughts are related to my emotions, how the interpretations I choose and place on neutral life events are the things that either resonate the traumatic energy and negative emotions I have in me, or in that moment, if I pour enough of my mind energy into a certain pattern of thought, I generate the emotion that I experience in the next moment. This is directly observable. And in Way of Mastery, it says almost exactly the same thing as from the Course in Miracles. Course in Miracles says, open a curtain in your practice. Put away everything you think you want, your trifling treasures put away. And when you do that, when you cancel everything you think you want, you put away everything that you have found of value to you, you put it all down, you leave a clean and open space for the Christ mind to come and show you something completely different. So every time you have a negative emotion, a tension, a resistance, a reaction to something that is a restriction or rejection of the moment, the Course in Miracles invites us to cancel our goals, put away everything we think we want, let go of everything we think we want, put away everything we have of value, be willing to put it all aside, and leave a clean and open space and ask the Christ mind to show us something else, something that the conscious logical mind can't show us. So it's there, and it's there in the Kabor's manuscript. The Kabor's manuscript and the translations from the ancient Aramaic directly into English say the word that got translated into, it's this Aramaic word that got translated into something in the Greek and then became forgiveness or pardoning in the English, the word is shebag. And it doesn't mean to pardon somebody else. It means to cancel or dismantle. It means to take apart what doesn't belong in me, to put down that within me which is disruptive, distorting, and hurtful, and do inner work to restore my perception to an accurate perception, to that spiritual faculty of true perception. And so here we are, another source, the Way of Mastery, the definition of forgiveness in the third lesson. To forgive means to choose to release another person from the perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It doesn't mean pardoning them for doing something wrong. It's about releasing my attachment to perceptions I have created. It's therefore an act of forgiving or dismantling myself for my projections. And as I begin to forgive, dismantle those projections, remove the false perceptions, each time I do that, I take myself deeper and deeper into the purity of my own consciousness. I get to see more of what I've been carrying with me into here. Pema Chodron was talking about how every time I have an interaction with somebody that leaves me feeling upset, I could choose to use that as a way to wake up to the fact that I'm carrying boulders in my backpack. And this interaction and the interpretation I threw on it has alerted me to the fact that I'm carrying around a backpack with painful boulders in it. And once I become aware of that, it's an opportunity to unload some of those boulders, to put down the backpack, etc. None of these great spiritual teachings are talking about what to do to another person who has wronged you. They're talking about how you can become aware that regardless of what's happening in the world around you, you are the one who's creating your emotional response by how you choose to interpret and then respond to those events. So I don't know if this is an accidental hand raising, but here's someone, area code 901. You're in the air. Who do we have? Did you intend to put your hand up? All right, I'll mute you and we'll keep going, hoping that if you wanted to say something, area code 901, you can press 1 twice. That'll take your hand down and put it back up again. I'll be happy to turn on your microphone again if you're indeed interested in making a comment or asking a question. So this chapter on forgiveness from the Way of Mastery says every time I judge somebody, it's very much like the Course in Miracles. It's telling me a couple lessons ago that the only thing that hurts me is my thoughts. The only thing that affects me deeply is my thoughts. And every time I judge myself or anyone else, I've literally created the belief within myself that I'm guilty of something. This ties into the bottom line observation that I give patients in a new session. It says, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. Well, here's that same wisdom in the Way of Mastery, Lesson 3. Each time that you judge anything or anyone, you have literally elicited guilt within yourself. Right? If I judge that somebody else is wrong, the only way I could know that is I've had the similar thought or done the similar action myself. Way of Mastery tells us that we actually have a place within us. It's still there. It's always been there. It'll never go away. That place within us that knows the perfect purity of our brother and sister, of the beings of brilliance and light that we are on this journey with. And the fact of the matter is, they're beings of brilliance and light, even if they're not acting that way, even if they've temporarily forgotten or they have yet to discover their brilliance. And so everything we see any of our brothers and sisters doing is either at the extension of that awareness of their true nature as love. It's acting from their knowledge that they are a being of brilliance and light. Or it's a cry for help and healing. Everything that anybody does is either the extension of love or a cry for help and healing. Imagine if you just took that and understood and learned to observe and question for yourself over and over, is everything I'm seeing from everybody through that filter of everybody's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have? And I don't know that that's true, but I do know that the more I pretend it's true, the better my life gets. Well, here we are. Way of Mastery Lesson 3 has the very same wisdom and says, look, everyone you see, there's a part of you that knows that they have the same perfect purity of creation that everyone was gifted. And everyone you see, everything they're doing is either an extension of that love or it's a cry for help and healing. You know, there's a place in this book where it says, if you could see what happens inside your body every time you judge, the very cells in your body stop functioning properly. If you could see what happens when you judge, you would never judge again. And this is right in line with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, who says, look, every cell in your body is either in shutdown and defense mode or health and growth mode. And when it's in shutdown and defense mode, it doesn't take in nutrition, it doesn't build new parts that are worn out, and it doesn't eliminate waste. It's in a state of shutdown and protection, which is okay for a short period of time. But if it stays there too long, then it starves to death and drowns in its own waste. Here we have, of course, the Way of Mastery that says every time you judge, you shut down the functioning in your body, the cells in your body stop functioning properly, and if you could see it and feel it, you would never judge again. So, 563-999-3581. Comments, questions, refutations, answers. We've got about 26 minutes left. What's on your mind? What part of the Way of Mastery do you want me to talk more about? I remember in the fourth lesson, it says, you know, people do a lot of this identifying with one thing or another. But you're missing the boat. Your true nature is that you were created in the flow of creation, and you have this original blessing, not original sin. And if you release identification with all of these false labels and arbitrary delineations, then you can step into a greater, deeper, more direct awareness of your true nature and your connection to everything else in creation. In the fourth lesson, it says, the next time someone asks you, who are you? Do not give them a name. Do not say, well, I was born in a certain town in a certain part of the planet. Don't tell them you're a Democrat or Republican or a communist or an atheist or a Catholic, but tell them the truth. Here's the truth about you. Learn to say this in your own mind and eventually say this out loud to people. Who am I? I am the extension of love in form. I have never been born, and I will never taste death. I am infinite and eternal. I shine forth as a sunbeam to the sun. I am the effect of God's love, and I stand before you to love you, to extend that loving energy to you. The book then says, now that will raise some eyebrows. It will also transform your world. For in this book, Way of Mastery, they say it's time to stop seeking Christ outside yourself and start choosing to take responsibility for birthing the Christ mind within you, for being the Christ mind incarnate. Now, in some religions, that would be blasphemy. But in this book, in this teaching, in the Course in Miracles, in the Guy Finley teachings, in the Krishnamurti teachings. It's just waking up from the cultural conditioning and its negativity and finding a way to move your conscious awareness more frequently, more directly to the observation of the miracle of life that you are. It just baffles me that human beings at this stage of the game, as far as we know, the most complex expression of life on this planet, that we walk around and we ooh and ah at a jellyfish or a sunrise or a sunset or a killer whale or a sperm whale breaching, or we just go gaga over, you know, a work of art or a skyrise building or a fabulous bridge, and we marvel at it as though it's some kind of great miracle. And yet we are there as consciousness in a physical body, and it's a mind-boggling miracle of our existence, and we just take it for granted. Not only that, but we sit around in those energy systems that we call physical bodies, and we run ourselves into the ground. And we complain about how this part of the body is too small or too large or not smooth enough or not hard enough or not nimble enough, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why do I read The Way of Mastery over and over again? Because it calls me to remember that of all the miracles that I look at outside of me, none of them is greater than my own awareness, my own presence, my own experience, my own existence in form. And everything we can do to wake up to that more frequently, more often, improves our life quality. It improves our experience of life moment to moment. There's a song by Peter Mayer titled Holy Now, and the lyrics read, "When I was a boy, each week on Sunday we would go to church and we would pay attention to the priest, and he would read the holy word, and then he would consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. When I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time that Moses split the sea in two and Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad that miracles don't happen still. But now I can't keep track because everything's a miracle. Everything, everything. Everything is a miracle." Now, when you think about it, wine from water is not so small. But an even better magic trick is that anything is here at all. So the challenging thing becomes not to look for individual miracles, but finding where there isn't one. When I was young and the holy water was rare at best, it barely wet my fingertips. But now I have to hold my breath. It's like I'm swimming in a sea of it. You know, it used to be a world only half there, heaven's second-rate hand-me-down. But today I walk it with a reverent air because everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. I'm going to ask you to read a questioning child's face and say that that's not a testament. That would be very hard to say. Or see another new morning come and say that's not a sacrament. I tell you, that can't be done. this morning, I stood outside and saw a little red-winged bird shining like a burning bush, singing like a scripture verse. It made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out. Wow, how things have changed since then. Everything is holy now. Like I said, it used to be a world only half there. Heaven's second-rate hand-me-down. But today I walk it with a reverent air because everything is holy now. And the more we can wake up to that, minute to minute, the better our experience of life will be. When you say everything is holy now and you wake up to realize that you are a part of that everything, you're well on your way. That's one major prong of this work. The second prong is every time a negative thought comes up, use the tools. Own it, catch it, see it as an error in thought, and use the tools to correct that error in thought. And that two-prong approach has been transforming my life for the better for over 17 years. And we are hoping that you will engage this process, use those tools, and also experience your life getting better in ways often that words can't describe. And then do us a favor. Help us out. Give us a call. Send us an email. You can send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at Jeannie at whyagain.org. whyagain.org. Let us know your comments, your questions. Let us know topics you'd like to have us explore. You can help me out by giving me suggestions for people that you would like to have me interview, either for the Mind Shifters Radio or for the On Your Mind podcast by Journey's Dream. And on an ongoing basis, you can tell us what would be of use to you for us to have as a topic on this radio show. It is our hope that this process, 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, is of use to you. And it makes it easier for us to live into that intention and that hope when you give us feedback. What's working for you? What's not working for you? I had somebody I already mentioned this on Tuesday, and they said, look, it was all right that somebody had a very intense worksheet last Tuesday, but can we do something a little bit more laid back, a little bit more nurturing, nourishing, and supportive? And that helped transform Tuesday's support group into something that was more amenable for people. So how can we support you? What's on your mind today? What would be of use for you to have us discuss or read or listen to? Or 563-999-3581. Susan, welcome.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi. I was driving until now, so I didn't want to talk, but it is always, always, always good to be reminded that whenever there's anything but love or support, a supportive feeling or a positive response to something someone does, that it's showing us something about ourselves. And I have spent a lot of time rejecting part of that idea because somebody might be doing something that in its present iteration I wouldn't do. I wouldn't, to my own mind, I wouldn't do that. But if there's a bad feeling, I am somehow culpable on some level, and there is an underlying something. Something that I have done that kind of fits into this category. One of the great blessings was the Yurati came onto our Zoom group the other day, and she has been getting better and better from being sick with that flu virus. And I come from a pile of medical people who don't understand why anybody would go without a vaccine. And I have just had a hard time not being judgmental. And the bottom line of the judgmental is, if you want to do the very best thing for yourself, can it include a community, or is this some, are you some isolated being? And if you are isolated, yeah, go ahead and don't get vaccinated, but we are a community of people, and we have not contained the virus ostensibly because our individual feeling about it, our personal health situation, our immune system status, whatever the reason is, has prevented us from reaching herd immunity. And I have friends on one side who will say, oh, well, the news media likes to instill fear, and they're doing it on purpose. And these are people who are bright and respectable and loving and all these good things. They're saying these things about the news media having a negative intention to make us scared, herd us in, make us all do something that maybe isn't the right thing to do. That's on one side. And then you have the other side, which says we're being controlled. I'm not making much sense. Anyway, long story short, Urante's presence, Urante, who I really admire and have worked with, came on our Zoom thing, and we had the best discussion. Two of us out of the four or five, two were refusing the vaccine. The others had been vaccinated and strongly believe in it. And I'm thinking, why do I feel tight in my chest? Here's this person whose opinion I respect. I'm sitting here listening, and I'm still doing something. And I realize for me, the common denominator offense is I don't care enough about others. It's that global. And it's an accusation. It's a big fat should. I should care more. If I cared more, I would do X, Y, Z. And the flip side of that coin is I do care in this instance, and I got a vaccination, whereas you don't care because you didn't get the vaccination, which is, anyway, it ends up pointing right back. It ends up telling me I'm in trouble because I don't feel good. And Urante talked us very carefully through her thoughts and reasoning and the pain she has experienced in a very divided family. And here she is, at great cost to herself, maintaining a position she feels she must maintain. She must. He helped me sort of trip myself over the line. And Tim Bingham said the same. He said, I feel much different. I feel so much better having had Irate on the Zoom thing. It just loosened me up a little bit to realize we just don't know things. We don't know enough. We don't know enough to make a judgment. We can make personal choices, but beyond that, we don't know enough. And that somehow fits into everything you were saying about how if there's any upset, just have a look at yourself. What are you doing? How does this translate into something you've done or might have done or have thought of doing that you found so offensive you buried it and projected it onto someone else? It's just been great to hear that again. That was my first thing. And before I forget it, I just want to say I hope you'll consider maybe reading, after we finish this year with A Course in Miracles, reading The Way of Mastery or even just playing your own readings of it, which are so good that, and we all need to hear them again. I haven't read The Way of Mass. I've read it twice. And when I say I've read it twice, I can tell you I haven't gotten it all, of course. And I love that you keep reading it because that's what it needs. So that was two things. I just hope you'll consider do that, or I'm going to make a suggestion that you do that for next year if you don't have a plan already. And the other thing is to just say thanks for pushing that thought that it's our stuff. If it isn't love, then it's our stuff. Keep looking at the our stuff. Let's keep looking at the tool, using the tools, because we just can't hear that enough. Or I can't. I should speak to myself, for myself. So, anyway.
Well, I think that's, you know, one of the core observations in this work is that, you know, the way to get more liberty in my life is to recognize what I'm doing to keep myself imprisoned. And once I wake up
right.
and realize that I'm imprisoning myself with my negative thoughts, then instantaneously options open up for more liberty and more freedom
mm-hmm.
of movement.
Yeah.
But if I don't understand how I'm the one that's creating a prison, right, every time I have a negative emotion, it's because my thoughts are off the mark. And it
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean nobody ever does anything that's hurtful or insulting or disrespectful. We're not saying none of that stuff happens. All we're saying is that when that stuff happens, that's not what's creating my upset. What creates
right.
my upset is my interpretation of it and how I use that interpretation to form mind energy or pour my mind energy into those thoughts. That's what creates my emotions.
Right.
And if I want to judge somebody else as being wrong and this is wrong and they shouldn't do that and I want to, you know, fume and steam and I can, but you remember the whole idea, all these various ways to talk about my anger, my vengeance. You know, when you're planning vengeance, make sure to dig two graves. That's the ancient wisdom that says, hey,
I love it.
This is the way things go. And, you know, being angry at somebody is like drinking a glass of poison and hoping they'll get sick.
That's good. That's true.
You know,
yeah.
It's the old little rhyme that says, the vessel in which anger and vengeance are stored always sustains more damage than those upon whom it is poured.
That sounds like a poem.
It is. This whole ancient wisdom piece is something that I could use to wake myself up in each moment where I have an uncomfortable emotion. I could choose to wake myself up to how I'm creating that. And then if I don't like what I'm creating and I see how I'm creating it, then I can have a choice. But if I don't even realize I'm the one doing it, there's no option for choice.
Right. You know,
so it's whether I'm screaming at somebody because they cut me off in traffic or because they chose not to get a vaccine or because they chose to get the vaccine or any of it is just an alarm system. The best use of it is as an alarm system to wake me up to how I'm using my thoughts right now to create a negative emotion.
Right. The thing that struck me about the visit with Yurate was that the feeling on the Zoom was, it's as if her presence and the work she has done has created for us a climate of acceptance and love so that we had the best discussion that could be had, I think. So I'm wondering how we can, I guess just by doing our own work, how can we approach, even before we know anything about what's about to happen or be said, how can we be open and be that space of love, automatically deciding that whatever happens is okay, more than okay, maybe wonderful, maybe just what should happen. But I felt as if that, for me, that session was a blessed session. And it served to be, I mean, it's almost like having had a vision. The feeling remains, has remained all night and today. It isn't as if I'm in an altered state, but something opened really wide that wasn't so open before. And I'm thinking most of us approach our lives from a contracted state because we're just not well enough to do otherwise. I don't know what comes first, because something opened us, but something was already open.
Well, you were asking how do you, you know, go into every moment staying wide open like that, and the only answer I have for that is practice.
Yeah.
Right? I can't really say I'm going to go into every situation wide open and seeing only love, but I can practice noticing the early warning signs of anything that's less than love, because that's,
yeah,
you know, what's going to catch my attention. My tension, my anger, my fear, my sadness, my frustration, and the more I train myself to catch it earlier, the more I can see what the error in thought is that's given rise to it.
And from the intellectual side, like I always try to figure things out. So from the figuring out side, we could say, I'm going to enter this situation knowing nothing. May I enter this situation knowing nothing? If I think I know something, at least put it in a box outside the door for the time being. I didn't do that for this meeting. I just was looking forward to seeing her. I haven't seen her for ages. She's been working, and she stopped work, and so there she was. The discussion went from sort of, ain't it awful, and do you agree with this and not that, to a true dialogue. And I would just say I wish that for the whole world, that we could have that going on more. And how can we do that except with using the tools? That's what we have to do.
Okay. You know, from the figuring it out perspective, I don't want to go too far down that road. If that's a trap, but, you know, if it works for you to do that, then do it. I think it's a real trap for me to say I'm going to be loving in every moment, because
that's not something that
I have the ability to do. However, I do have the ability to gradually increase my habit of being vigilant and owning with 100% responsibility whatever it is I do generate. And the sooner I can catch myself generating something that's unpleasant or disruptive or destructive, the sooner I can intervene.
Well, I totally agree that I can't make a decision to be loving, but I can remember that I don't know anything. That seems to be a thought that I can, a useful thought for the thinking person, to go in at least and say, I don't know anything, and then go from there, because love will probably show up if you really have that thought.
All right. Well, I'll give that a go. I thank you again for your comments here at the end of the show, and as always, they're welcome, and it's nice to hear from you. I will mute you and put us into the intro to the second hour by saying we come from love, we're made of the stuff we call love, we actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you, and I hope, tomorrow's Friday. I started to say I hope you have a good weekend.
Right.
I'm ahead of myself.
I'm going to plan on a good weekend, but I'll try and be here tomorrow. Have a great show.
Okay, thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Thursday, December the 9th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show, and I'll direct you to our website, which is whyagain.org, and you can click on anything and everything. You can just spend a lot of time on the website finding different tools. If you don't know where to start, there's a button in the upper left corner that says Start Here. And so there's just lots of information. You can download the book for free that Michael's been reading. We're coming near the end of it. It's hard to believe that this is the last month of the year. Christmas will be here before we know it. And so we're glad that you're with us every day that you are with us. And we'd like to hear from you. Hopefully, Mark will be calling in. We've been going through the Beatitudes with him, and that has been really awesome. He asks some good questions and puts in a good perspective, and it's making for a really good discussion. He couldn't be with us yesterday, so we said we'd skip over and come back today. I think we had gotten through the fourth Beatitude, so hopefully he'll be dialing in here with us shortly. And Michael's not in yet, so we'll give him just another minute. I've been working with India again this morning, and they've made the change to the Dragon Klingon game on the Android. The question button was covering up when you got to the bottom of the page and you went to click the next button. The question button was laying on top of it. So they've now moved in just the Dragon Klingon. They've moved that button to the top so that it doesn't interfere with the game itself. So he's got that submitted to Google, so another change will be coming through hopefully before the weekend. And they're working on the Apple. He actually just sent me a Skype text and asked if I was available to work on it right now, and I said, no, I'm getting ready to do the radio show. So hopefully in the next hour or so we'll have the Apple submitted, and so just let us know. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. It's just the first time, you know, as you've been talking about the app, well, since it started, it's been 2 years now, as you mentioned, submitting the Apple, it ties into, you know, that old thing about the apple in the Garden of Eden, and, you know, they found out that it wasn't the apple in the tree, it was the pear on the ground. It was kind of, but thinking about here we are, putting this ancient work of Yeshua into the Apple system going throughout the whole.
Shift your microphone just a little bit. Shift your microphone just a little bit.
Is that better? Is that better?
Yeah. It was just popping as you were talking. Yeah.
Awesome. Was Mark joined us yet?
Not yet.
Well, then what I'm going to do, because I'll hold off to talk about, get back into the conversation about the Beatitudes, I'm going to jump back into reading. So we're on page 161, and it's been a long trek, 161 pages of why is this happening to me again. I've delightfully surprised myself with some of the things that I understood over 25 years ago when I wrote this book. When I think about it was a quarter of a century ago, it boggles my mind. But looking at some of the stuff that came through so clearly that when I look back, I didn't even know that I knew. And there it is. I wrote about it. But anyway, if you're not familiar with the book, it's a book about first century Aramaic forgiveness. It's entitled Why Is This Happening to Me Again and What You Can Do About It. It is out of print. However, you can go to our website and download a copy of it free in any one of several languages. You can still find used copies on eBay and or on Amazon. They've always got lots of copies. Fortunately, we put I don't even know how many tens of thousands out into the world back a quarter of a century ago. And over a period of about, I guess we kept printing it for, went out of print about 5 years ago maybe, so 20 years. In any event, enough copies are out there that there's still lots of them available pretty inexpensively on eBay or on YouTube. So we're in the chapter on work it out with your best friend, and we used to call the worksheet, the work it out sheet, the forgiveness process. This is a piece of paper on which you can do the step-by-step forgiveness process. It walks you right through the whole thing. And or you can go to your app store and type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness in there. You'll find it in the world's only forgiveness app that Jeannie is recreating on the next level. And it's pretty awesome. It's grown significantly since its beginnings, and will continue to grow. So excited about that. But you can find it there, or you can go to whyagain.org and click in the upper left-hand corner. And that will walk you through everything you need to know about how to do first century Aramaic forgiveness. If we go back to the ancient Aramaic, you hear the word said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And you say, well, what does that mean? Well, in our modern updated language, the word heart there would be the unconscious. Take care. In other words, you got to do something about what's unconscious in you. People say, well, if it's unconscious, how do I take care of it? How do I do something about it? Well, that's what forgiveness is. The step-by-step how to access the hidden or dissociated parts of your own mind, parts of your mind that have you have actively dissociated from, or it was passed on to you through your genes with locks already on that part of the mind. So, you know, it's kind of like if you create a page in your computer, let's say you write a book and you put a password in, and then you lose the password. What happens? You don't have access to your book anymore. Jeannie was reading an article about somebody who'd made, I don't even know, hundreds or millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on this new cryptocurrency stuff, and lost his password. I mean, he's a millionaire. Can't get a penny of it because he lost his password. Well, the way the human mind works, the way you put something into that part of the mind, the dissociated or hidden part of the mind, is when it moves in you, when it's resonated in you, you deny it. That doesn't mean you go, oh, I don't want to look at that. It means that when that energetic pattern, let's say it's rage, the way you dissociate from rage, if you've got rage, is that when it starts to move, you turn and look at somebody and say, you really made me mad. You just locked that part of your mind out of existence. For those who, in the early days, were part of this process, you'll remember that when I did the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop at the top of the board, I would always have the words deny, suppress, project. And you'll note the last 10 years or so, since I got instructions to change that, it's deny, dissociate, project. So the minute that I say, you make me so mad, I tell my mind the lie that it is not allowed or not involved in the anger that I'm experiencing. It's caused by someone else. So now what the mind has to do is hide the true cause of my anger, the energetic pattern that's at the root of my anger, or my sadness, or my fear. You make me angry. You hurt me. My hurt. So what I did is I just locked away the root energy of my hurt. Now the password for getting into that part of your mind is forgiveness. 2,000 years ago, Yeshua understood exactly why one would say, take care of the heart. Take care of what's in your unconscious. What happens when you engage in the forgiveness process is you open up and access that which you or your bloodline have previously chosen to be unconscious of. And when you open the unconscious and you do it from a space of conscious, active, present love. Now, this is a practice. You know, you don't automatically instantly say, oh, well, okay, I'll open my unconscious and do it all. Well, if you've never tasted being, if you've never tasted functioning as love, you don't just step in minute one and say, oh, well, now I'm opening my unconscious. Now I am going to function as conscious, active, present love. It's a practice. It's a work. And when you engage in forgiveness, what happens is that you down, or pardon me, you open up the part of your mind that has been shut down. And by having access to that part of your unconscious, you get to change the dynamics within the mind. You get to access what's been hidden. And so this whole body of work is about how to take care of the heart from which the issues in life for you flow. And you remember that Yeshua said, don't judge by appearances. Well, the mind is an appearance-generating machine. It's got a reality for everything. And if there's hostility or fear in your reality at any given moment, then you have work to do. So we're talking to Richard about opening this part of the mind and engaging in the forgiveness process. And I suggest to him, Richard, suggest you keep a journal of your work and an ongoing list of worksheets to be done. You will probably find it productive to do many sheets around your conflict with women. So he's talking about, in our last reading yesterday, he was talking about the fact that, you know, he had lots of work to do around women because his relationship with women were nothing but conflict. He was so deep in thought before he spoke. A worksheet on being close to my sister Amy might be a good starting point. It seems being close to people is a little less of an issue than conflict with women, though it's still a fairly big issue for me. Normally, I would suggest you wait until you've used the worksheet for a while before taking on that kind of an issue. Since we're doing this together, and you have support rather than doing it by yourself, let's go ahead. You might want to date and number your sheet. And as you check out the worksheet, okay, we just had a power outage, by the way. And so Jeannie has to reboot her computer. Mark, I understand you're there, but she can't engage your microphone yet. So I'm just going to finish this this introduction to the worksheet, and her computer will probably be back up, and we'll be rock and roll. We've got to reboot the internet and all that kind of neat stuff. So normally when people start doing the worksheet process, what I suggest is you start with a minor issue. The worksheet is designed to open and show you your unconscious mind. And if you start off with, you know, the big major life issues, when you start opening that stuff, people just go blotto unconscious. They're like, there's just no awareness left with which to do their work. In this case, since Richard's got some support, I'm saying, well, okay, let's go. This is a little bigger issue than I'd suggest starting with. You know, if you think of upset on a scale of 1 to 10, if you're level 10 upset around some issue, I wouldn't suggest you start that. Start doing that as your first worksheet or your 10th worksheet. You want to pick something that's maybe a 1, a 2, or a 3 in terms of upset. And then as you develop the skill, you can go deeper and deeper. So I suggest that you get a 3-ring binder and keep your worksheets in it. In the future, each time you look back at old sheets, they will give you new gifts and new insights. Step 1 on the sheet is about getting clear on the source of your reality. When you start each sheet with this reminder, it's easy to get past your projections of wanting to either blame others or yourself. Blame, aside from being a way to give away your power, is an avoidance mechanism. So step number 1. So here we're starting into a worksheet. My reality is made with thoughts from my own mind. As I learn to change my thoughts, my reality will change. Richard said, I'm seeing more and more of the truth of that thought, Michael. it's actually starting to feel like an empowering idea. I'm realizing that reality is in my mind and is changeable. Like, that's a major step, because most of the world believes that here I am, I see the whole world out there as it is. The truth is, with your eye, you have never seen anything. Well, come on, Michael. I mean, the whole world knows you look out there and you see what's going on out there. Liar, liar, pants on fire. No, you don't. The eye is a one-way valve. The eye is an antenna. You can no more see out of this antenna than you could pull the wires off the back of your TV and look inside those wires and look out in the out of the antenna on your roof. It's silly to think you see things through a device that receives information but does not allow you to look out through it. They're not a set of windows. The eye is a receiving antenna for light. And according to the information that is resonated in you by the light your eye receives, your brain literally generates the world that you see. Everything you think you see is a construct in your mind. I think we talked earlier in the week about the CIA research that we happened to come across. You know, I mean, we've been teaching this concept for decades, but you can go to the CIA's website where they spent millions of dollars, I don't know how many millions of dollars of your taxpayer money, to do research on human intelligence. There's a chapter in the book. You can download it free at CIA.gov. There's a chapter in the book on perception. And here's what, quote, the CIA concluded in writing in the book on their website. Free, go download it. The mind does not perceive reality. The mind generates reality. Your perceptual visual pictures are a construct in your mind that reflect, first and foremost, the content of your mind. When you realize that, then you realize that you're not looking at the world. You're looking at the content of your own mind massaged into something that looks like it's out there. There's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says, you think the problem's outside of you. If it were, you would really be in trouble. But it's not. It's inside of you. And if you have the tools to access it accurately and truly, and you do it, well, love is conscious, active, and present, then everything false in your carbon-based memory system that you allow to come forward directly as it really is begins to dissolve. And that's when the work of forgiveness begins. And that's when everything starts to shift, and in particular, shift everything in your physiology. So forgiveness is the key there, and this is how it's done. So Richard is really starting to hear. You know, we've spent many hours in conversation. He's gone up and down in excitement about this work and dejection about this work and thinking it's stupid and who would want to do this darn stuff anyway. But he's at the point where, he's starting to build some brain cells. So step 1A acknowledges what seems to be true and gives you the space to write down your thoughts. If there's not enough room, and use another piece of paper. Some people write the entire form out in longhand each time they do a worksheet. In the first blank, in 1A, you name the person, place, thing, or event that triggers your disturbing or painful reality. We actually had a woman at Heartland back several years ago, and she liked to call this worksheet the trigger sheet, because it was a way for her to acknowledge to herself that somebody had triggered something in her that she needed to work on. So Richard asked the question, so I put my sister Amy in this blank? In this case, yes. If you had a worksheet, say, on your car not starting, car would go there. Now, you know, your car can trigger. You ever kick the car? You ever kick the door frame? You ever kick the wall because something got in your way? Well, your car made you mad because it wasn't start. It wouldn't start, really. Well, that's interesting. If you do a worksheet on the idea we processed earlier today, being quote-unquote stupid, that is what you put in the first blank. Next, you place your own initials between the brackets as a reminder that this worksheet is about you and a reality in your mind. You then write a brief description of what you perceived as happening. And I'm going to check in with Jeannie and see if all technology's back up and what's happening, sweetie.
I am back up, and Mark is on with his hand up.
Great.
Well,
then we'll just put a hold on the book and continue with that later. And welcome, Mark. How are you, sir?
I'm all right today.
Sweet. Well, we used yesterday to do a totally different topic, so that was perfect. And so here we are back looking at the Beatitudes. And it's been a fun discussion with you the last couple of days. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's really nice to be in conversation with other people on this. It's so enriches the understanding and other people's experiences. This is really good.
For sure. All right. Well, I think we finished with Beatitude 4,
mm-hmm.
where we took the classic, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they shall be filled, and translated through the Aramaic construct, and that is, you who hunger for the mind structure underlying the attitude, judgment, and behavior described as just and fair behavior between people, for you shall attain it. So, well, all of a sudden we'll become a field that attracts justice rather than plays out the projections of somebody else deserves whatever it is we give them. So any other thoughts about that beatitude before we move on to the next one?
No, I think really what's my experience with Beatitude 4 is as we do that work, I guess I do, I shouldn't say no, yes I do.
Go for it.
as we do that work, we really come, you know, more and more in alignment with what our secondary purpose is. You know, because as the primary purpose is being fulfilled more, then we start to be kind of moved in that direction of our true fulfillment or what's really, you know, in alignment for our secondary purpose.
Yeah, and if you look at the Greek translation of that, of righteousness, which has become an interesting, you know, we hear people talking about their righteous anger and such, and it's nothing to do with this beatitude from the Aramaic perspective. It's that we bring our mind into alignment with truth, and in so doing, we function from being and follow the guidance, the right action that comes from being rather than
yes.
men's concepts of justice or what have you.
That's it. And it's not in the transition, you know, of moving from, you know, really my experience of living out of mostly my carbon-based mind to purification. In that process of purification, the right action can be 180 degrees from what we perceive would have been the right action, you know, and that
yes.
creates kind of almost a dissonance in the mind a little bit. It's like, okay, well, wait, I'm in this new aligned state and I'm being kind of moved in this direction, you know, and there's sort of an energetic alignment in that direction, but it's different than the way that, you know, I might have done it in the past.
Right. And
what would have been obvious in the past.
Right, right. And the interesting thing that you can put in juxtaposition with that is that the behavior, the thoughts, the words might be exactly the same as they were from the old way of functioning. They're going to have life in them now rather than just be a repeat of something from the past. And the
yes,
whole
absolutely.
Idea of the Beatitudes, the whole idea of this work is that we're truly functioning out of being, functioning where love is conscious, active, and present in us. So while the words might be identical from when I was functioning out of carbon-based memory, out of carbon-based memory, it's just replicating whatever's there. There's no life there. There's no live experience. It's just replicating the past. And this may be all the same words, all the same actions. Everything looks the same, but there's actual human life in the experience. And that's what this whole body work is about. Is, and, you know, you go back to Yeshua, and you'd think by the way many churches present what he taught, that he came here to teach us about dogma and doctrine and religiosity and all of that. And if you go back and look at his words, he's like, I have a single purpose, folks. I come to bring you life, and life more abundantly, to put life back into the moment where carbon-based memory is just replicating. And literally, you know, he talks about, you know, let the dead bury the dead, the blind lead the blind, that when we're just functioning out of carbon-based memory, there's no actual life there.
And that ties right into Beatitude 5, you know, where,
yes,
where when someone does that and there is life restored in the person, it starts to flow out into the world. And I'll give you an opportunity to kind of kick that off.
Sure, so number five, next one is classically translated as, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And that oftentimes harkens back into that, you know, well, I'll be big about it, I'll be merciful, but in Aramaic, it says, you who have rachma. And, you know, I can remember back in the day when we were working on understanding this word rock, when the live work was going on of what does this mean. And we actually did some, I was traveling with the manuscript, getting digital imaging, looking to get high-res digital images done on, I was out in California, and we connected with a community of Native American speakers. Actually took the manuscript to one of their services, and one of them got up and read it, you know, just like it was, you know, like they were reading something in English. It was pretty cool to be part of that, and we were asking people who were Native Aramaic speakers, still a very live language, what this word rachma meant. And the response we got was, we don't know. The meaning has been lost. And the most profound thing that they could say about the word rachma was, we don't know what it means, but our tradition says it's the most precious jewel you could have. And it related to, related to something like a big diamond ring. It's like really precious stuff. And what we had determined at that point, and it was kind of confirmed by them, but there was no real remembrance of the original meaning of the word, was that rachma was this filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, and medical science is catching up and starting to show, gee, there's a place in the brain where when love is there, it changes behavior, it changes perception, does all kinds of things, just, you know, exactly what the Aramaic spoke about. So there's this filter, then when it's connected to active present love, when it's live with love, it shifts everything. And it becomes quite literally a gateway through which our created essence, love, shows up in physiology. And the way that I've, you know, developed over the years to bring people to that experience is simply to invite them to think about the first time they held a newborn child. And for people who've had that experience, to just go back and remember holding the newborn and tap into the essence of the newborn. And virtually everybody that we've asked that question of, and we've done it all over the globe, different countries, different, you know, cultures, different languages, hold the newborn, and everybody comes back with, first of all, it's usually a smile. Even people who, you know, they kind of look like they're living a pretty miserable existence, if they'll just take a moment and tap into the moment where they held that newborn child. And it may be a child that, gee, it was 25 years ago, and they're angry at the child, and the child's misbehaving, and it's done all kinds of things. But when they stop and they tap in, there's a breath and a sweetness that comes into them. And they use words based in love, variations on the theme of love, to describe that newborn. And then I'll ask people, so is the newborn loving you or is the newborn love? And it just becomes so obvious to everyone. It's like, and no, they're not doing love. It's who they are. And when I realize that's who I am, you know, yesterday we talked about, I just, after the show the other day when you were on with me, I was listening to an historian who came up with a thing called the Mr. Magoo hypothesis. Have you ever heard of that?
I don't think so, unless I heard it from you, but don't remember it.
Okay. Well, actually, I just came in touch with it the other day, so it's not something I've ever talked of before. But
oh, okay.
Do you remember the cartoon character Mr. Magoo?
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Do you remember anything about the cartoons, what they really were, what happened in them?
I do not.
I remember watching them, but I didn't have any real recollection. It's been a long time. But this historian goes on to explain why he came up with this thesis called the Mr. Magoo hypothesis, and that is that Mr. Magoo was this character who was so nearsighted, he had never had any idea where he was. But he had an expectation of where he was and what he was doing and who he was in that space. And he behaved as though his expectations in that space were true about where he was. And it never matched. You know, he was walking through the world. You know, he walks through a lion's den and he thinks he's at the zoo. And, you know, and it just unfolded. I mean, it's such a perfect metaphor for people who've forgotten that they are literally conscious, active, present love. They think they're rage or fear or pain or trauma or drama, and they're walking through the world as though they are this rage or fear, and they're in this space that's designed for active, present love, but their mind's whole construct is that of something that makes their, you know, their belief about themselves foolish. I went back after listening to him. This was just the other day that I came across this historian's presentation and watched a couple of the cartoons. It was like, oh, I'd forgotten. I maybe never even realized that that's what it was. It was just kind of this goofy thing. But when you see it, it's worth getting on YouTube and just Googling YouTubing one or two Mr. Magoo cartoons, because he's literally thinks he's in one place and he's in another, and it creates such ridiculous circumstances. And this, to me, is how this presence of Rachma is how we undo the Mr. Magoo in ourselves.
Mm.
Because we open the gateway for the truth about who we are to enter into, to flood into physiology and into the experience of the moment. And rather than acting as the ridiculous self that, you know, our early traumatic experiences or our genes told us we were, we start to function as we truly are, and we show up in the world as truth. And then we get to interact honestly in the world. And the result that 2,000 years ago Yeshua offered of this is that when you open this gateway that brings literally active present love into this form, you know, when we look at someone at what we call a human so-called body, there's no reason to believe there's any human life there unless love is present and active in that form. It's just a human looking form. But opening this literal gateway, one, it brings, it's a space through which love shows up in our physiology and starts to fuel everything. And two, the mind itself is kept on track through the presence of intentions, which are the raw material of goals. The mind is kept on track with love rather than getting lost in hostility or fear. And so the result that Yeshua promised with this one was, you'll receive it. They'll end up living as the presence of love, and the Mr. Magoo experience will be gone. Now, I don't think that part was actually in the scriptures 2,000 years ago, but it kind of is a great metaphor for us functioning out of something that we're not.
certainly is. And I, you have such a good articulation of Rachma, so I'm going to just leave that where it's at, and it's really, really well done. And for what I'll share on Beatitude 5 is I'll just share kind of an example of a lived experience of how this showed up for me. Just, I mean, it showed up many, many times, but just how it showed up in this particular one. Because one of the things that begins to happen as we do Beatitudes 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that repeats, and I see this as kind of a roadmap that, okay, well, Beatitude 5 is really saying that if we keep doing this, we're going to get to this restored state, like this restoration with, you know, the Rachma. And one of the things that I envision is that as we fill up, you know, because remember, I was learning these and really practicing them in earnest and continue to, but I saw the contrast so distinctly as I was going through 2011 to 2015 with the whole mental health stuff. And I would say for a while, I became really selfish, and I've used the word divinely selfish. I don't know if I heard that from you or Rex, but that's a word that I heard from somebody. And I had always thought, well, that was selfish in a bad way. And in this work, I realized, well, the divine selfishness is actually needed for the restoration of who it is we really are, to shed, you know, anything that's out of alignment with that pure state.
The place I've come with that word of selfish is a shift in the language to it's a state of being self-wise, as opposed to selfish.
Yeah.
There's a transition word that, oh, I do it from that state of being, and it's always on track with love and therefore always self-wise and will serve all of life at the same time. Because I've got that earlier beatitude where just and fair behavior is the underlying construct in my mind that directs all of my behavior.
Well, and that aligns with this one really well too, because as we fill up, think of a cup that's empty, you know, and if we blocked out or resisted this pure state, then we're essentially denying, you know, the true nature of who we are. And so as that restoration starts to happen, I think of the cup kind of filling up, and then at the top of the cup it overflows. Well, if it overflows, then there's lots that can be given. And so we could just let it overflow and drop to the ground, or we can put it out there in the world. And the story I'm going to share here is from Starbucks. I was actually using Starbucks as my office away from home at the time. And I would go there and write and do whatever work I was doing. And one day I was sitting there, and this thought came up to go get a chocolate chip cookie. And I didn't particularly have an inclination that, you know, it wasn't what would typically be there for me would be craving something, right? Like that was out. It was just the thought was go get a chocolate chip cookie. So I go up and
sounds
down the
like
line
divine
and I'm looking
guidance.
Around. Yes, this divine guidance comes. So I'm in line thinking, okay, well, and I order the chocolate chip cookie, and the person, the barista says, you know, would you like that warmed up? I said, sure. Could you put it on a plate? It was instead of the bag. And they said, sure. So they come back with this chocolate chip cookie that's all warmed up. And as I turn, that same inner voice says, well, actually, my eyes are directed to a woman. I actually paused in the Starbucks, and I look over, and there's a woman there, and the voice says, go give it to that woman. And like, okay, this is really strange, right? This is not in my comfort zone at all. And so I did it. I went over and I said, hey, I bought this chocolate chip cookie, you know, and I'd like to give it to you. And she looked up, and you would have thought she won the lottery or something in terms of her demeanor. She's like, really? She's like, thank you. Like, I really needed that today. And And actually, she said, I really needed that today later, so I messed up the story a little bit. But she was just, thank you, and appreciated it, and et cetera. So I went back and worked for a couple hours, and she packed up, and she was walking out. And I didn't notice, but she caught my attention, and said, hey, I just want you to know that I really needed that today. And I genuinely appreciate what you did. I don't know what that woman was going through, but that was an insight I had of this overflowing from kind of the true heart center, right? That true Rachma love overflowing out into the world. And where the first four Beatitudes to me have, and I know I'm going just from the lived experience of them, to me felt more like, not that they didn't affect other people, but more like it was like me trying to navigate, like, who am I and what is it that is happening here? And so as that restoration started to happen, then it became more clear. It's like, okay, this is to be put out. This is to be shared. This is to allow for that energy, that love to be brought to the world.
You know, over the years, people
and of course, to finish where it says, you know, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. And I know that word's Rachma. It's like I received then this immense love restored in me again. It was almost like a reverberation of, wow, I didn't even do a big thing to me. I just bought a cookie, right? But when she said that it was so meaningful for her, it was almost like it filled me up. So I don't know if the metaphor would continue this way, but it's almost like my cup got bigger, right?
I'm with you. I mean, that's exactly what he says the result will be. You know, if you open this thing called Rachma and your judgment and behavior are fueled by the presence of love, what it says is you'll receive it. So it sounds like, you know, as you gave it, you received it, and then it came back double. That's precisely the principle he's talking about here. So right on track.
And I want to encourage people, if they're going to practice these, it's like, again, just like we talked about a couple of days ago, you know, there's a patience, you know, being gentle and patient and starting with where you're at and letting that be okay, you know. But what these promises are, these aren't like, you know, something that you have to rush into. This is something that it's going to happen. If you do these things, promises, you will receive them. You will receive the fruits of these work, of these practices.
Well, that's the, you know, that principle in step 7 in the reality management worksheet is, I give something away, I get the original, they get the carbon copy. And even if they're not home for delivery, I've already received it. In this case, that woman was home for delivery, and it obviously filled her to overflowing, and she was able to once again return it to you, and who knows who else. It's that expansion principle. And interesting, in the Aramaic, if we take the phrase that was, the kingdom of heaven is within you, the word that is translated as heaven is the kingdom of expansion. It's within you. It's like when you allow this energy to move through you, when you let that gateway open.
Nice.
Everything
like
shifts.
That.
And we're fueled, literally fueled by that which this human device is designed to be fueled by. You know, I'll oftentimes ask people the question, you know, have you got a device in your home or your office or your car or your shop that works really well when you unplug it from its power supply? Everybody says, well, of course not. What makes you think that your human form could possibly function properly if you unplug it from love? It's power supply. And there's a gateway, Rachma, that was understood. It's looking more and more, according to research, like it's what's called, part of the brain that's called the angular gyrus. And that's where that whole system is changed by the presence of love in that part of the brain.
I have a question for you. And one of the things I think you said, and I may not have heard you correctly, but you had mentioned this idea of the kingdom of heaven being expansion, right?
Right.
I heard you right.
Yes.
And I've also heard you explain the kingdom of heaven as a community of love. And so can you talk to that? Is that the same thing, the just a different way of expressing?
To me, it would be the same thing. It would be okay. What I heard you describing in your beautiful chocolate chip analogy or story is exactly that. So you had an inclination that came through Rachma. You fulfilled that inclination and you handed it off, which expanded the presence of love, obviously, for this woman, who in turn, fueled by love, returned the energy to you and expanded it still further. And what came out of that? Like, you know, if you guys happen to be back in that store tomorrow and that woman was sitting at that table and you looked at each other, what would you be living in? The community of love. It's expanded,
right?
And it's eternal when we choose to go there. And the internal benefit, and this is, again, where we receive it, is we're plugging our physiology back into the energy source that it was always designed to work from. It was never, and it will never function from rage or guilt or grief or hate or vengeance or sadness or greed. It will never function from any of that. The only result will become, people will walk into more drama and trauma or literally find themselves in their own hells. It was interesting. There's a Netflix series that Jeannie and I watched not too long ago called Lucifer. And
sure.
The devil, have you seen it?
I have. I've seen, I think, maybe three of the seasons.
Well, it's pretty interesting. Well, in one of the later seasons, you know, and for those who are listening who are not familiar with it, and there's some pretty good stuff that happens in it, but, you know, Satan is in hell and decides he wants to go on vacation, so he moves to L.A. And he decides he likes L.A., so he's going to stay there. But there's a point, and it's so right on. In fact, you know, they stopped after six seasons, and I've actually got it in my notes. I've made some notes and plan to communicate with the developers of it because they left it at such a perfect place to bring actual forgiveness to the world. But if you remember, you know, the devil, Satan, Lucifer, has this power, and his power is he gets close to people, captures their gaze, looks into their eyes, and asks them, what do you really want? And the only thing they can do, I mean, they literally go into an altered state, and they tell them what their true goal is. It's right on with forgiveness, so right on. But in one of the last, I don't remember exactly which one, maybe three or four from the end of season six, is he expresses how his job as Satan was to find out those deepest desires, their goals, and make sure they weren't fulfilled.
Oh.
And there's the core of forgiveness. That, you know, whenever, and it's so backwards to virtually everybody when they first thought, wait a minute, why would I cancel this perfectly good goal for somebody to cherish and honor me? That's stupid. Well, you're right. It's a perfectly good goal, and you would never cancel because there's something wrong with it. But if you load it into your mind and it resonates in you some form of hostility or fear, you're now living in your own hell. What's Satan's job? To make sure you stay living there. And in Aramaic, the word Satan means the resister, one who misleads. And you watch the average person when you ask them to be responsible for their rage, their fear, their guilt, their insanity, whatever it is, what do? Oh, no, that's not true. They go into resistance, and then they tell you their mind's lie, their story about how it's somebody else's fault. The resister, one who misleads, precisely Satan. So at some point, I'm planning on communicating with the producers of that and inviting them into and handing them off the technology of forgiveness because they've set the stage literally for Lucifer to deliver actual forgiveness to the world, which I think would be just like the epitome of redundancy.
That'd be a clever twist.
Well, you know, I was so shocked, you know, and it doesn't show up until I think it was maybe halfway or more through the last season of it that he just kind of slipped. And if he didn't have the brain cells, it'd just go by. Most people wouldn't recognize it as meaning anything. But he's like, oh, my job is saying just to know your deepest desire and make sure it never happens. And it's just a perfect setup for season 7 for him to come back and say, okay, now I'm going to do the big reveal. Here it is. And to hand people, you know, the next power, you know, there are other characters in the that are other divine creatures, and they each have a power. Well, I can see where season 7 would be the power that this new iteration of Lucifer has, is the ability to inspire people to cancel the goals, collapse the perception that their pain is based in, and clean up carbon-based memory. It would just be like a perfect 7th season to close it out and deliver forgiveness to the world.
Well, I support you in making that connection, because that would be quite wonderful for them to have that information and tie it in.
Yeah, it would be so perfect. So hold space for that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Then let's look at the next beatitude, which is historically interpreted as blessed are the pure in heart, for they,
yeah,
shall,
for they shall see God.
See God. And in Aramaic, it speaks of you who have, and the word in Aramaic is dadsian, you who have a completely purified mind. In other words, you got to go in and clean up carbon-based memory. You know, the other day we talked about perception is a construct of the mind, and if everything comes from carbon-based memory, you know, these constructs, then we have, and there are unresolved issues, then whatever perceptions our mind generates, those perceptions are going to be totally and completely false about the actuality of the world. They'll only be true about us. As we do our work, you clean out carbon-based memory so that everything based in the lie, anything based in hostility or fear, is removed from the structure. And then we've got a database, this multi-generational database called carbon-based memory, that has only accurate information in it. And when it has accurate information in it, then everything it presents about the actuality is accurate. There are no lies left in it. But it's still not the truth, even though everything it holds is true, because it's not a live present moment experience as we're designed to have. It's still replicating something from the past. So we go from errant perception, but that's still death. But when we've cleaned up the database, then that becomes the stepping stone for, well, we've acquired the habit of collapsing carbon-based memories constructs. So now what do we have? We have a clean and open space within the mind. That 9-bit space is open, and now the creator's mind can write enlightened perception. We can gather directly from the actuality a live present moment experience that is truly filled with the active presence of love and the true experience that we're designed for with life. So we go from errant perception to corrected perception to enlightened perception. And so this beatitude says exactly that. You who have a purified, completely purified mind. And what it says is that at that moment, you're now going to comprehend or come into direct relationship with Allah, the creator, the invisible source of creation. It's like they talk in the scriptures about the mind of man is not yet conceived of what lies in store. The mind of man can't do that. But when we clean carbon-based memory up, Adamos, the red clay, then we can become an instrument that enters into full relationship with love. And it's just so profoundly powerful, considering, you know, the alternative of fulfilling all the goals of the non-being mind.
Well said. Well said. And I know we don't have too many more minutes here. And so I don't want to repeat everything you said because it was so well said. Another way that I really like the way that JM also said it, with his interpretation, he says, where it says, blessed are the pure of heart, he wrote, wise are they who are consistently restored in this way, which is reflective of that pure heart. And rather than for they shall see God, like flashes of lightning, God will increasingly reveal itself in the depth of their soul. And that reflects what you're saying, I believe, in terms of that corrected perception of things and that enlightened perception, or like getting to that place where there's this. And my word for it, which was a difficult word, honestly, for me to kind of come into contact with, because most of my life I felt like I didn't know anything, you know, that I was a little bit lost. I mentioned last time the idea of the duck with the, you know, feet paddling underwater and a lot of insecurity. And as my work with this started to come into a place where that purity of heart really took more hold, there was a knowing that was from that connected place, from that source, you know, holy, pure space. And I'll share one of the examples of how that started to show up for me. Because I had a lot of issues with money, I'm going to use a money example. You know, I had a lot of fear of money. I put a lot of energy into money, and in my early days, you know, put money above a lot of things. So it was interesting, because in some of my work with this, as my heart began to purify, there would be this clarity of what was going to happen with whether it's the stock market or, you know, something. And I remember several times where I was given insights of, you know, hey, here's an insight of what's going to take place. But I didn't believe it. You know, I was still in this, well, I am unable to know, right? So I would doubt it. And then it would happen. I'm like, well, that's interesting. And there was this, for me, kind of a restoration over time into trusting more and more and more and more and more and more and more. And the more I trusted, the more I was able to act in a way that was consistently in alignment. Now, I'm not perfect, of course, in terms of doing that, but there's an element of contrast of how I had been to how I am today. And there is a clear knowing, and I know you know this because you will, you know, call people out of the blue sometimes, right? To them, and you just call. And I remember when you used to do that with me, it's like, wow, how did he know? Not that you necessarily had the full information of why that call was important before you called, but you trusted the divine spark that in the pure space, you trusted that and acted. So that
back
trust
to the first beatitude.
Expands. Yes.
And exactly what you just said is back to the first beatitude. Are you living in the eternal forces that will incline you toward behavior and follow through with that behavior?
Yes. And this
right
becomes more, beatitude six becomes more, it's like, hey, that deepens. That becomes, there's this wisdom that starts to come forth that is more and more in someone's life as they continue to practice these things, comes into their life more and more with a trust that is way beyond, for me, a trust that I had ever experienced in my life with anything. I had misplaced trust. I had different ideas of what trust was, but this became a pure trust in this divine source.
Trust Rukka. Back to that eternal force that was designed for us to incline us toward the highest behaviors possible. And we are down to the last few seconds, so thank you for that. We have one more to cover if you've got the space tomorrow. Mark, well, no, I guess today's Friday, isn't it? So it'll be Monday if you happen to have the space.
Thursday.
We can... Oh, I was thinking it's Friday.
Thursday.
Oh, good. We've got another day. All right. Well, does that work for you tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's do it
great.
Tomorrow.
All right. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift you can give, and the world's ready to receive it. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.